Yes, thank you. Thank you for that nice introduction. I am a research microbiologist at the USDA ARS in Maricopa, Arizona, and all of my research takes place on reclaimed wastewater produced by municipal treatment plants, and that's why I applied to this particular symposium because I'm specifically talking about urban wastewater. So a little bit about what I'd like to talk about today. First, a very brief history of water reclamation in Arizona, and then moving into how I got involved in this study and when cyanobacteria suddenly really bloomed, for sake of a better word, in the news a few years ago. And then describe briefly a study that I've had going on for about 18 months where I'm looking at the toxin-producing cyanobacteria in water reclamation ponds and in reclaimed water in Arizona. So this data is about 5 years old, but water availability estimates in Arizona, I'm sure you all know how very, very dry we are. We're about as desert as you can get. And so we have three basic sources of water in Maricopa. We have the surface waters that come from major rivers when they have water in them. The Gila and the Salt River don't often have much water in them, but the Colorado is usually flowing. So we have about 52% of our water source comes from these surface waters, and about 45% from groundwaters. And the reclaimed effluent as of 2005, I believe this number may have gone up just a little bit since 2005, but our effluent is about 3% of our total water availability in Arizona. And of the numbers there, you know, the surface water, groundwater, the only one that has any potential for increase in any time in the future is the effluent, because if anything, our availability of surface water and groundwater is decreasing in Arizona. So I started this study, I got the idea in around 2008, when all of a sudden, I don't know if it was my increased notice of what I was seeing in the news, or whether the news people had kind of, you know how they grab onto something and then all of a sudden it becomes the worst issue in the entire world. I don't know if cyanobacteria always has been the big problem that it is, or whether the news just grabbed onto it. But in late 2008, all of a sudden we were just seeing news stories everywhere about what a terrible scourge this was. And you know, as you can see, New York Times, CNN, and MSNBC had stories about first a reservoir in New York State that was closed down, then several dogs died after swimming in a stream in Oregon, and that really got the news media going. I mean, as soon as the dogs died, that really brought the media out. And just recently, there is an Ohio lake that has been closed down for an entire year. There will be no fishing allowed until the fall 2011 because of the cyanobacteria outbreak. So I just started thinking about the cyanobacteria and what we know about reclaimed water in Arizona. So our reclaimed water, generally, when it's produced by the municipal treatment plants, generally, if it's not used right away, will go into retention ponds and pulled out of the retention ponds and used for municipal irrigation. So in a lot of the newer communities in Maricopa, you will see very big water structures that are basically, people like them because it's water and we don't have a lot of that, but it's retention ponds for the irrigation water. So cyanobacteria is very basically blue-green algae. You know, very, very common. There is a subset of cyanobacteria makes up a very, very big diversity of organisms, but there's a subset of cyanobacteria called microcystis. And these are the this is the cyanobacterial group that tends to produce these toxins. The toxins are a neurotoxin, and therefore of large a lot of concern to people who are operating these municipal systems. And we know that algae does flourish under conditions of high sunlight and increased nitrogen. And what we have a lot of in Arizona is sunlight. But what's very interesting is that all of the wastewater that is produced and put into these retention ponds has to be denitrified by law. And so actually the nitrogen levels in these ponds are often far below what you would find in natural waters. So I began to wonder whether we would actually see an increased toxin production in reclaimed water ponds. It hadn't really been looked at up to that point. So my study began in the winter of 2009. My study site was a water retention pond in Maricopa, Arizona. You can see in the bottom photo there's some soccer fields around the park. So this water retention pond is used to irrigate the soccer fields and baseball fields in a municipal park. So for the entire year of 2009, we were collecting water samples from this retention pond, filtering them to filter out all of the bacteria and extracting the total DNA from these samples. As a control site, we also looked at a groundwater-filled pond. This groundwater-filled pond is on the lands of the University of Arizona Maricopa Agricultural Center, and is also used for to store agricultural irrigation water, but has never had any reclaimed water put into this basin. The initial hypothesis, based on what I had been thinking, was that we would see much higher toxin levels in the reclaimed water pond than the groundwater filled pond, just because of all of the excess nutrients and things that were available in the reclaimed water. We used real-time quantitative PCR, and we did three PCR reactions on every single sample. One was to quantify the markers for total cyanobacteria, and then we did a second PCR where we quantified just that the microcystin, the group of bacteria that is often responsible for producing these neurotoxins. And the third set was looking just for the gene that codes for the production of the neurotoxin. So every sample after filtering went through these three real-time reactions. And I'm not going to go through the whole real-time PCR thing. I just didn't think that this was the audience for it. But if you do have any interest, those two publications listed at the bottoms were the ones that we used to guide the beginning of the assay. We did tweak these a little, and if you had any interest and wanted to contact me, I'd be happy to discuss it ad nauseum with you. So over 12 months, the total cyanobacterial levels in the groundwater and reclaimed water ponds were about equal. A little surprising. I really thought that the algae levels would be higher in the reclaimed water pond. However, what the reclaimed water pond may have been treated for algae. We were not able to get the history on that. But either way, the levels were statistically equal, although the numbers in the reclaimed water were slightly higher. Statistically, they were equal throughout the year. When we got to the microcystis levels, we began to see some interesting patterns. So if you look at the warmer months of the midsummer into the fall, the average in the groundwater and reclaimed water ponds were almost exactly the same. However, what was very interesting to us was what was happening in the winter. In the winter, we were seeing through most of the winter, the reclaimed water numbers were three orders of magnitude lower than in the groundwater pond, but also in other on other measurement dates, they were below detection limits. We couldn't even get numbers on them. So this was unexpected. But then when we looked at the markers that actually code for the production of the toxin, once again, in the midsummer and the warmer months, we saw about equal levels of the potential for producing toxin in the two ponds. But in the winter and cooler months, except for one date in late January at the end of the study, all of the levels were below detection limits. And our detection for this microsystem was about 30 markers in 100 mils of water. So this was completely unexpected. It had started off as a very simple summer student project, but you know how sometimes those blow up against your will into much bigger. This was a surprising finding, and we wanted to find out what was going on. So what we thought we were seeing is some sort of a seasonal factor that is in reclaimed water that is actually hindering the expression of these toxin genes, a very exciting finding. Went to the literature and found that a lot of people obviously have done work on this toxin production, and we found that the possibilities are nitrate temperature, suspended solids, and heavy metals. Increase in any of them in reclaimed water could inhibit the toxin production. So we've been monitoring only over the last 2 months. So I have to warn you, this is very, very initial data, and it only reflects some of the warmer periods. We're finding that, as expected, the nitrate in the reclaimed water is a little lower. Most of the metals and nutrients that we're measuring are about equal in the reclaimed water and the groundwater. But very surprisingly, chromium levels are lower in reclaimed water, not expected at all, because reclaimed water is often high in heavy metal concentrations. But we're finding higher levels in zinc, selenium, and lead, which could be contributing to this decrease in toxin production. But once again, as I said, very, very initial data. So what we just to reiterate, the levels that we were finding of these three markers were equal to those reported in the literature from blooms in Lake Erie in Oregon. But we're finding out what is actually inhibiting the production of these toxin genes could actually aid in coming up with some water management strategies that could help to deter this toxin synthesis. And one thing that I'm always battling is public perception of reclaimed water. Very, very negative. It's very hard to get past the whole toilet water thing. And so anything that looks good for reclaimed water is actually good as far as increasing public confidence. And once again, acknowledgments to all of my collaborators. Thank you.